now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Everybody out there, good evening, everyone, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, finding your courage to help you reclaim that which you are and always will be. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It is a beautiful Wednesday out here on the East Coast, and so hopefully wherever you are enjoying milder temperatures, and just take in these last few summer weeks. Okay, very nice. All right. So anyway, as you've been listening to me for some time, and as I say at the opening of these broadcasts, that each and every broadcast, the focus on the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within this context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and certainly the relationship that we have with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the websites. The first one is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. The second website I'm giving you is my personal one. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either one I will get to see. So whether you go through BBS Radio or right straight through to mine, I look at them and I thank you for your comments and insights and suggestions. And as always, if you'd like to call in and be part of this show tonight or call in with any insights or questions or just simple general conversations, I take that too. I really want to hear what you have to say on tonight's topic, the transformation of expanding sound, the power of one voice. And so if you would like to be part of this conversation, just call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as usual, I'll be taking your calls after the break. And now, if just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me here this evening, this broadcast will be podcasted. It'll be posted on the BBS Radio website. So you can go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, any ones that you missed or any of those that have piqued your interest. So again, just go on the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. And, as I started this broadcast series 6 years ago, I always have strove to emphasize this integration of spirituality and our mental health, because one thing is for certain. I've not only seen through these broadcasts, but also through my clinical practice, is that there is a growing awareness and hunger for the need for people to not only integrate their mental health with their spirituality, but also to apply their spiritual growth within the context of relationships. Now, many of you may be familiar with the work of Edgar Cayce. He was one who is considered to be the father of holistic medicine, and he was also given credit as being the most documented psychic of the 20th century. He also echoes this sentiment. He says, "What is truly valuable in thought, whatever is truly valuable in activity and in experience, is the sense of appreciation, this inner realization, and the understanding of the self, namely understanding the self in relation to others and the self in relation to God. And meditation is a means to this end. And another person highly influential in my life and my training was Dr. Harold Koenig, who is the director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health out of North Carolina. And he also notes that a person's religious and spiritual belief practices are important resources for coping with illnesses. And furthermore, he has done great research in this area, as well as other colleagues, that demonstrates a connection between one's beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as the positive beliefs or the comfort you receive and the inner strength gained from one's religion or spirituality, meditation, prayer, and that's just to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it will also help your overall well-being, as well as you may feel a higher sense of purpose, a greater peace, deeper hope, and meaning. You may experience having, more confidence, improved self-esteem, and self-control. Again, just to mention a few. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And this is where I come in, because I have always had a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to reclaim what has always been in them and remembering who they have always been and are as a soul. Because I do have a solid belief, and it is granite solid, that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life, in terms of our giftedness, in terms of our skills, in terms of our talents, in terms of our strengths and character traits and so forth. And how we live out our giftedness is in and through various relationships. And this aspect alone is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth, no two people express their gifts, skills, talents, strengths, and character traits and so forth identically. So in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. And people have tried to imitate others and how they do things, but really no one person has the ability to duplicate us, because within us is what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus refers to as hachaetas. It's a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will, or as I like to explain it to kids and teenagers, it's a thumbprint. Okay, because as I explain, especially little kids, they get this, they latch onto it real quick, that everybody has a thumbprint, everybody has a thisness, but no two thumbprints are alike. Therefore, no two hachaetas or uniqueness between people are identical. And therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. But unfortunately, millions of people never had the chance to discover their uniqueness, because even though we're in 2025, and trust me, that year is flying by, we're often told to look in all the wrong places. We're told to look for our thisness in the externals of life, or the accumulation of things, or the accomplishments, or the accolades. That's not where our true self lies. Our true self lies in our understanding of just how unique we are as a soul. And certainly, this is not where our thisness, uniqueness, and hachaetas is to be found in those externals, because the full expression of who we are is to be found within, at the soul level. And this is very important. We need to understand this fully. And that, when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. In fact, moreover, we often go along in life, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may think that we need to hide our giftedness. So we'll push down our skills and our giftedness way, way down inside of ourselves so that others cannot see it. Or perhaps we were told at some point growing up that you'll never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. And that's just flat out wrong. And the irony here is that these relationships where we experience these wounds just might have been within our own families or coworkers. What about our friends? However, you know, this transformation is possible because when we heal ourselves through forgiveness and kindness and compassion, over time, we learn how to love ourselves and to be gentle with ourselves. And in doing so, we begin to remember who we are as a soul. Because when we're compassionate with ourselves, we then can be compassionate with others. We begin to see others as that soul, as that uniqueness. And when we have forgiven ourselves, then we can certainly be more forgiving of others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this one aspect opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are truly able to know ourselves as a soul and live from that soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others to see themselves as a soul. So first and foremost, transformation begins with us. And yet there is so much more than what we have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you, and certainly the courage to discover who you truly are. Or as Anthony DeMello puts it in his work, A Journey Without Distance, he writes, "The spiritual quest is a journey without distance. You travel from where you are right now to where you have always been. From ignorance to recognition. For all you do is see for the first time what you have always been looking at. Whoever heard of a path that brings you to yourself, or a method that makes you, you know, what you have always been? Spirituality, after all, is only a matter of becoming what and who you really are." As I said, that's Anthony DeMello, and it comes right from his book, The Heart of the Enlightened. And as I said, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, sum it up in one word if you want to, it's namaste. That because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are. So we have to first look within ourselves and see our beauty as a soul and hear our beauty as a soul and know our beauty as a soul. Well, does anybody out there remember reading the story or watching the movie Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who? I'm sure you have. It is a classic. Well, if you haven't heard of this story, let me give you just an overall gist of this without divulging any spoilers, you know. But if you haven't had the pleasure, certainly, you know, put it on your list for this weekend and you will enjoy it thoroughly. So here's the overview. Horton is an elephant just walking along one day, minding his own business, when all of a sudden he hears a strange sound coming from one of the specks of dust on top of a budding flower. Now, this sound, as he learns, is coming from the microscopic town of Whoville. And ironically, he's the only one who hears the people of Whoville. You know, nobody else can. And the people of Whoville are in fear for their lives because they are so small and perhaps be considered insignificant to others. And as a result, Horton vows to protect this speck of dust, declaring, "A person's a person, no matter how small." Well, the backstory regarding how Dr. Seuss came to write this tale is a fascinating one. Because I don't know if you've noticed or not, but during World War II, Theodore Seuss Geisel, better known by his pen name, Dr. Seuss, was a cartoonist who illustrated some pretty unflattering pictures of Japanese people. And yet in 1953, Seuss visited Japan to research an article for Life magazine. And he wanted to write about the effects of war and post-war efforts on Japanese people. Now, with the help of Mitsugi Nakamura, Dean of the Doshisha University in Kyoto, Dr. Seuss went to the schools all over Japan and asked the kids to draw what they wanted to be when they grew up. And what Dr. Seuss saw made a deep impression on him, so much so that when he returned to America, he started work on Horton Hears Who. And that story actually reflects his change of heart about the Japanese. And his book is dedicated to Nakamura. He said in an interview, "Japan was just emerging. The people were voting for the first time, running their own lives. And the theme was obvious. A person's a person, no matter how small." See, this is a prominent theme that emerges time and time again, when people not only find the power of their own voice, but also listen to the empowerment of others, because they too find their voice. And when they do, they are never the same again. Also, in the book Sound, Native Teachings and Wisdom, or I'm sorry, Visionary Art, let me say that again, Sound, Native Teachings and Visionary Art, Joseph Ryle states that the mysteries of life is very simple. He says it's so simple that anyone can understand it, namely, that sound is the basis for all that is. Everything comes out of sound, and sound comes out of vibration. And yes, sound is that powerful. Now, why is that? Why does sound have that kind of power to transform, especially when people find their voice? Well, I'm convinced sound has that kind of power to heal, because over time, people change the vibration of their thoughts. And not just their thoughts, but people also change the vibration of their voice. And in doing so, they have changed the vibration of their behaviors. So sound and vibration go hand in hand. And this, you know, transformation is something that I see and hear in counseling through those who have been traumatized and, let's say, also struggle also to talk about their experiences. They have yet to find their voice. They have yet to hear themselves talk about what has happened to them. And this is certainly the case with anybody who has gone through any kind of trauma or event in their lives in which a person's assumptions have been totally shattered. You know, the way the world should work, or I assume the kindness of all people, or I assume that if I did everything correctly, I would be protected and rewarded and on that, you know, it's just all of that. When something very traumatic happens to the person, those assumptions are shattered. And finding or reclaiming your voice through all that takes time, but it can be done. And you know, the last thing that heals in a person who has these shattered assumptions are these shattered assumptions. The assumptions and a person's prior perspective are completely altered. And now a person has to, now how do I see the world? Ask those kinds of questions. How do I see myself? How do I see humanity? How is my relationship with God or the divine? All of that has to be healed as well. Well, you know, the world of science calls this phenomena brain plasticity or neuroplasticity, you know, a rewiring of the brain. And basically, neuroplasticity allows the neurons, nerve cells, in the brain to compensate for, let's say, traumatic brain injury or disease, and to adjust activities in the brain in response to new situations or to changes in the environment. Now, there's an old saying out there in neuroscience that neurons that fire together are wired together. And this means the more you run this neural circuitry in your brain, the stronger that circuit becomes. And this is why, to quote another old saying, practice makes perfect. Because you're building cell memory, you're building muscle memory, you're building memory. Now, in layman terms, it means that the brain can actually relearn how to process what it sees and what it hears, what it tastes, it touch, it smells, and even to speak, and send signals to muscles so that people can walk again, and so forth. And the ability to learn new things enhance your existing cognitive capabilities. And this is why they've seen great success to help people recover from strokes and traumatic brain injuries. And, you know, certainly, this is still very much cutting edge. It's been around for, you know, a while, but it's still, you know, they're making more and more discoveries out there. Brain plasticity or neuroplasticity. Now, on another page of this, you know, if you've seen the movie The King's Speech, you know, which starred Colin Firth and Helen Boehm Carter and Geoffrey Rush, you may recall that King George VI had a severe speech impediment. In other words, he stuttered. And by working through his early childhood trauma of being mistreated by a nanny, he actually was able to retrain his brain to control his stuttering problem. And just research in this area alone has given hope to millions of people, especially for parents of special needs children. You know, it has demonstrated how we can use speech and language therapy to improve communication and curb, say, behavioral challenges. And musicians can also illustrate, you know, this experience-dependent neuroplasticity, because when they have learned to play an instrument, they are involving their left and right brain synchronicity. And music therapy is an excellent way for people to rewire their brain activity, especially when it comes to reading and playing music at the same time, left brain, right brain. And another good example of neuroplasticity is learning a new language. You know, because when someone's learning a new language, the neurons responsible for language often connect with the sounds of hearing that language or recognizing pictures associated with the language itself. So if anybody out there is trying to learn, let's say, a new language, and you're using Rosetta Stone or another language program that integrates sights and sounds with prominent nouns and verbs and common phrases, this really, it provides just a nice way to learn language more easily than just by sound repetition alone. And other examples are also out there that neuroplasticity includes traveling and exploring new places, creating art or other creative pursuits, let's just say, reading, getting plenty of rest, exercise, and diet. And that's just more than just losing weight. So let's go back in time and see how brain plasticity works. You know, to begin, somewhere between the ages of 1 and 3 years old, our brains are just rapidly expanding with its neurons and synapses. By age one, we have about 2,500 synapses, okay? And by age three, we have about 15,000 synapses. However, as we age, we have about half that number. And this is because as we gain new experiences, some connections are strengthened while others are eliminated. And this process, as the scientists tell us, is this synaptic pruning. That is, the neurons that are frequently used develop stronger connections than those that are rarely or never used, and they will eventually die. So by developing new connections and pruning away the weak ones, so to speak, the brain adapts to the changing environment. And this was something, I don't know if you're familiar with the Swiss psychologist, Jean Piaget. He stated that we can adapt to new challenges in our world because we are well-equipped to learn. Harkening back to what we brought into this world? Absolutely. And he is best remembered or known for his constructivistic theory, which suggests that people actively construct their knowledge of the world based on their interactions between their ideas and their experiences. So again, the brain can relearn if it's ever been damaged to, how does it process sights and sounds and taste and touch and smells and speaks and sends signals to muscles and so on and so forth. And there's also a fascinating book out there. I've read it many times. It's just called Buddha's Brain by Rick Hansen. And in Buddha's Brain, Dr. Hansen says that by combining neuroscience with insights from thousands of years of mindfulness practice, you too can shape your mind. And you can use your mind and you use your brain for greater happiness and love and wisdom. And the book Buddha's Brain draws on the latest research to show how to stimulate your brain for more fulfilling relationships, or a deeper spiritual life, or a greater sense of inner confidence and worth. And people have used guided meditations and mindfulness exercises, and they've learned how to activate the brain in the states of the calm and the states of joy and states of compassion, instead of focusing on worry and sorrow and anger. And most importantly, people foster positive psychological growth that literally changes them in the way they live their day-to-day lives. So, why does sound have that kind of power to transform, especially when people find their voice? They've changed their vibration. They've changed the vibration of their thoughts, their voice, and their behaviors. And as I thought about this more and more, I couldn't help but ask the question, so what about silence? Does silence have the same transformational, expansive vibration as sound does? Well, after the break, we're going to explore this in more detail in the next 30 minutes, so as well as looking at just a clear-cut example of how thoughts and sounds and silence and vibration transform our core beliefs that are found in every addiction that's out there. But for now, I again really would like to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So if you'd like to call in, again, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Hauck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Right, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I just wanted to say before we get into the second half of the show, just deep felt, heartfelt gratitude that I have for everybody who tunes into this show. I am so grateful for your comments, your suggestions. I just really, really appreciate it. So, keep those suggestions coming. Drop me emails every now and then, and even let me know what else you would like to hear. Just as long as it fits into the integration of spirituality and our mental health, we are good to go. So, keep those suggestions coming. Well, earlier in the show, been talking about neuroplasticity, or the brain's ability to heal. to relearn new ways to carry out normal functions that may have been interrupted by trauma or disease or something else. And it's often referred to as a process of unlearning and a process of relearning. And the two go hand in hand. And sound plays a crucial, vital role in this healing process. And the more I thought about this, I just like, well, why does sound have that kind of power to transform, especially when people find their voice? You know, people who have been traumatized, it's kind of interesting how the brain handles it. The traumatic event is lodged somewhere between the amygdala and the hippocampus. And the hippocampus in the middle part of our brain is responsible for creating new memories. And yet, the part of the brain that is responsible for language is in another part of the brain. And so for the brain to, or let me say, for a person to be able to talk about their trauma, or talk about what's happened to them, their brain has to process it over to the part of the brain in which language is produced. And that's the tug of war, let's just say, between the amygdala and the hippocampus. And a lot of people get locked up, for lack of a better word, and just are unable to talk about their trauma. Something was so severe. And I always consider that as just a God-given gift, because maybe something was so traumatic, if we would remember it all at once, we would probably implode. But over time, as we remember bits and pieces, or as we're, you know, able to free up that mental energy and talk about some things, you know, then, you know, certainly that sound that comes from the human voice has that power to transform, and people begin to find their voice, and they shift from being a victim or seeing themselves as a victim to one who is empowered because they have found their voice. And, you know, so I'm convinced that sound certainly has this power to heal. The human voice has this power to heal, because just as sound and vibration go hand in hand, when a person is healing from something traumatic or a brain injury or something, people start to change the vibration of their thoughts. You know, and not just their thoughts, but people also change the vibration of their voice. It becomes more empowering. It becomes more certain, let's say. And in doing so, people change the vibration of their behaviors. Everything is vibration, because everything is energy. Sound and vibration certainly go hand in hand. And as I said, you know, prior to the break, you know, this transformation is something that I consider it such an honor, such a privilege to see and to hear for people I sit with. So this is often the case with anyone who has gone through any kind of trauma or event in their life, which a person's assumption has been completely shattered. So let me just, you know, stop, and I have a person on the line now. Is this Liba?
Hi, Dr. Houck.
Hey.
I'm so enjoying your podcast. It's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. Very kind of you. Yes. What can I do you for?
Just this morning, I read an article that they are proving that cells recognize sound.
Yes.
Which is really cool, but that's not why I called in.
Okay. All right. Yes.
I'm a singer and a songwriter, and now I have a one-woman show, but I'm so victimized by how I feel about my singing voice. I'm so captured. Mm. I'm so held back, you know, and
okay.
And I got referred to you, you know, to this podcast, and I know I have, so, you know, other people could sing my songs. That's what I keep telling myself. You know, Burt Bacharach, you know, you forgive him. You know he's the songwriter, but you still listen to him sing his songs. But I know this is tied into deep trauma, and I really want to be free, because since I have gifts to offer, that I'm held back,
Okay. All right. If I could just ask, just very briefly, what was the trauma that you experienced?
Well, I was told I was little, and I had two older sisters, 4 and 5 years older, that I worshipped, you know. And they said, somebody said my voice was breathy and I shouldn't sing, or, you know, or that's what I heard. Maybe nobody said that, but somehow I perceived that. And then I wrote a wonderful children's song in 2000, and I recorded it, and it took me 20 years to have the courage to make a music video. Literally 20 years to turn that audio into a music video, but I did it and people loved it. But I
That's
have
right.
every
You
time I
did.
play it for someone, I apologize for my voice, and I know I've got to break through this.
Well, one of the things, we just think, I don't know, as you're talking, I'm kind of getting the impression of, it's in the throat. The trauma, because whenever we get afraid or, something like, catches us off guard or takes our breath away, again, we have trouble getting the words out with the voice box and everything else. And but again, bringing in the diaphragm and everything that it takes to be a singer and all of that training. But everybody has their own voice. And I would, like I said, I kind of get the impression that it's a combination of maybe your throat chakra, the trauma of maybe not believing that you have something worthwhile to say or worthwhile to sing. But I knew a man one time who had told me that he couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. And he was just hitting all the sharps and the flats, and it's just like, ooh, it was really tough to listen to him. But and he asked something very similar to you. It's like, what do I do? What do I do? I really want to sing. And it's like, of course you do, because singing comes from your heart. It comes from your soul. So he was a believer, and I just said, okay, why don't you ask God, like whenever I sing, have them, the people out there in the audience, not hear my voice, but yours. Have them hear what they need to hear. And he was just the vessel. He was just the one. It's like, I have this music in me. I have the lyrics. I have the passion. I have the drive. And he just opened it up and he just bellowed it out. And he probably still hit the sour notes every now and then. But he didn't care, because people were
Didn't
so
care.
drawn to the fact that he had such joy when he was singing, that that really meant more to a lot of people. So just by way of encouragement, for your sisters to say that you shouldn't sing because you have a throaty voice, for some reason that I get the impression that that kind of a comment came from them, and their limitations or their perspective, it doesn't mean that it's right. But somehow, some way, because maybe your sisters were older, that you took that to mean, well, it must be the truth. But it's certainly not, because it didn't stop you from singing. It didn't stop you from making this children's song, and so forth. So certainly believing in yourself, because at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that everybody has a hachatas, a uniqueness, and so do you. And so, make your own kind of music, to borrow a song lyric from long, long time ago. Hopefully I'm not the only one that remembers that one, but that's how far back I go. But anyway, but no, all in all, Lee, that just you have a special talent. You have a gift, you have a passion. And one thing that you can do, in just a very practical sense, is just put your hands on one hand on your stomach, one hand on your heart. And as you're singing, just feel not only your breath, but also the vibration of your heart, and the vibration of your diaphragm. But then move your hand up to your throat and just keep singing. And it sounds like, no pun intended, but it sounds like you'll find a greater depth to your voice, a greater richness to it as you do that, because, you know, singing, yeah, okay, we say it's there in the throat, but it's not all there. You know, there's certainly other parts in which music flows. And, you know, and do this for 21 days, you know, 3 weeks, because in doing so, as I mentioned, you change the vibration of your thoughts, you know, sound and so forth. Anything that we do for 21 days, our subconscious takes it over and does the work for us. So, you know, practice makes perfect, building muscle memory and all of that for 21 days minimum. And you can just keep doing it. It'll just get stronger and stronger. But your subconscious will actually replace that thought of, well, my voice is throaty, my voice is very raspy or whatever, to, I have a beautiful voice and people need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just the very fact that you have this passion to sing, in spite of the fact that your sister said, don't bother doing that. I think that's bad advice, but you can certainly heal from that, you know. And
We were all little.
And it was probably something very innocent that they said to you, but because you were so excited about singing that you might have taken it the wrong way and then just internalized it over the years. But the very fact that even though it took you 20 years to do this children's song tells me that you didn't give up on this. You know, there was a huge part of you that just said, keep going, keep going, keep going. And, you know, give yourself a lot of credit. You sound like you struggled with a lot to accomplish this, but you did. You accomplished it.
Yes. And I have a one-woman show, and I'm writing musicals. So obviously there are going to be other people singing my songs.
Yes.
But this is a place where I'm writing lullabies for adults, and I'm writing, you know, I'm putting all the psalms to new music and all that. And I just want to be congruent, you know, with the songwriting and the singing. And I play a harp. So I think meeting you this way is so strategic, and I'm so grateful, really, because you're like a missing link from what happened to what's going to happen. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You are completely welcome. And like I said, you know, you have a gift, and, you know, people need to experience that gift in a way in which would really speak to their heart, their soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So keep writing music, keep singing, keep playing. Absolutely. Yeah. So
bless you. All right. Thank you.
Oh, sure. You are welcome. Thank you for the call.
My pleasure. And I'm going to stay and listen to the rest of your presentation. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Okay. Like I said, I always love getting phone calls from people. It's such a delight to just hear what's on other people's hearts and their minds and how they're finding their own authenticity. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. We were talking about, you know, the power of sound, the power of vibration. And I kind of tossed out there before the break, you know, what about silence? Does silence have that same kind of transformational aspect of expanding vibration? And I say expanding vibration because vibration gets stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, like it's that image of throwing a stone in a pond and the ripples go out. Same thing with vibration. Okay. And, you know, depending on the kind of day that people have, and I'm right there with everybody on this one, that many people can't wait to get home and decompress, relax, and enjoy some peace and quiet. I mean, we all have been there. We all have had days where it's like, oh, I can't take anymore. You know, but craving some peace and quiet is not exactly the same thing as being in silence. And how so? Well, when we think about quiet, we may think that it's the absence of sound, or at least, you know, the stifling the noise around us. We even have noise canceling earphones. In fact, I'm wearing a pair right now, or earbuds, or soundproof rooms, and so forth. These are all certainly helpful in eliminating background sound, which allow us to work from home or be on conference calls without all the distractions, or even to listen to music more fully without interference. But silence, on the other hand, is different, because in a spiritual or meditative sense, silence is intentionally entering into a state of inner peace and tranquility. It's intentional. We set that intention. We don't just say, oh, I have 5 minutes, I think I'll just do this real quick. It's like, no, we set aside the time and we tell ourselves, I'm going into this state of inner peace. I'm going into this state of tranquility. And it's more than just quieting our minds from, by dismissing all of like the checklist of things that we have to do. But entering into silence is more intentional, because when we do that, we seek to communicate with God on a soul level, a dimension where words aren't even necessary, let alone able to follow, because the soul has its own language, where the soul of God speaks to our soul and our soul speaks to the soul of God, and so on and so forth. And this is where, ironically, we discover that human language can actually be a hindrance to listening to the cry of the soul. We just don't have enough words in the human language, just humanity, whatever language it is. We just don't have all the words to be able to capture that soul language. But we know it when we express it. We know that we're being heard, and we know that we hear, and we just sit, and we come into that silence. We realize that if anything was spoken right now, it would certainly spoil everything. Okay. Well, does silence, let's return to silence here, does silence have sound? Another good question. Well, I think it all depends on who you ask. Because there's many interpretations out there of sound and silence. Now, according to a Dr. Seth Horowitz, I believe he is out of Brown University, I think, he writes in his book, The Universal Sense, he says, in truly quiet areas, you can even hear the sound of air molecules vibrating inside your ear canals or the fluid in your ears themselves. And others may interpret silence as a moment when something is left unsaid because words themselves are unnecessary. Like I said, maybe you experience this when you're being comforted by somebody or you're comforting them. You don't need to say anything, but you just kind of look each other in the eye, and just by your presence alone speaks volumes of healing, because you know. Because maybe you've been there, or maybe the other person has been there. And silence can certainly be an indication of empathy. We're really tuning in to how the other person is feeling about what they're saying, or we're listening more to the tone of their voice or the speed rather than the actual words. Okay, as in, there is an awareness of pain or suffering in others that's so deep that words just simply cannot express it adequately. So, in one sense, you can say that silence has sound, but more accurately, silence has vibration. And vibration that can not only be heard by our ears, and interpreted in our minds, but also that kind of vibration is felt deep within us. But just as we have the capacity for language, we also have the same capacity for vibration. And this is why we need to realize that when we choose the words we say, they too carry with them not only a sound of energy, but also they have the power to heal or the power to wound. So let's now take our thoughts and our sound and our silence and vibration into a very real struggle for many people, namely this world of addictions. Okay, now whether people get into an addiction because they initially are so overwhelmed with circumstances and their emotions that they just simply don't want to feel anything, or they're so emotionally shut down that their addiction allows them to feel something. What keeps reinforcing addictive behaviors are the irrational negative patterns of thinking that really distort a person's reality. Okay, and these patterns often lead to emotional distress or contributing to conditions like anxiety or depression. Remember, vibration, energy, sound, silence. Okay, so let's take a look, at these underlying messages that are found, these core beliefs that are found in any kind of addiction. And it all comes back to, sooner or later, shame or guilt. Well, the first core belief is, I'm basically a bad and unworthy person. Where does that come from? Feelings of inadequacy and failure, or humiliation and degradation, or committed to hiding the secret of reality of addiction at all costs because of this deep sense of unworthiness. Well, we can reframe that from I'm basically a bad, unworthy person to I'm a worthwhile person deserving of pride because I have value, dignity, and worth. You hear the difference? Can you feel the shift in the vibration? That's certainly more empowering, more transformative. Okay. The power of our thoughts are intense. In fact, if you want to change any kind of negative thinking, journal positive transformational thoughts for 21 days, and eventually your subconscious will heal. Your subconscious will take it on. And then you'll be able to do the work, because in those 21 days, you have not only changed your thoughts, but you've changed the vibration of your thoughts on a subconscious level. So, core belief number two, nobody would love me as I am. In other words, I know everybody would abandon me if the truth were told. Everything that goes wrong is my fault. And significant persons start to feel cut out or pushed away or useless or neglected when it starts to take over a person's thought process. So nobody would love me as I am. However, here's the transformation. I am loved and accepted by people who know me as I am. I am loved and accepted by people who know me as I am. Again, do you hear the transformation? Do you feel the transformation? Do you feel the shift in that vibration? Okay. Core belief number three, my needs are never going to be met if I have to depend upon others. My needs are never going to be met if I have to depend on others. And here, a person just feels so unloved, so unlovable, no confidence that others will love them. And it's really displayed in a lot of external anger and rage, or internalized as depression or resentment, self-pity, even suicidal ideation. But here's the transformation. My needs can be met, and they can be met by others if I let them know what I need. Okay? My needs can be met by others if I let them know what I need. Okay. Again, you not only hear the transformation, but can you feel the shift in the vibration of, say, more positive words or positive sound? Okay. And the last one, core belief number four, let's say sex, drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever it is my most important need. Sex, drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever is my most important need. And, so one's support or care of affirmation and love become, let's just say, through drugs or alcohol, or may even become sexualized or distorted through another substance. But whatever the addiction is, this substance abuse never meets the need for love and care. It's only seen as an avenue. And as I spoke in the last show, it releases a lot of dopamine, the reward center. but it doesn't do anything to release oxytocin, which, because we're social beings, that is what we need the most. And so there is a lot of cover-up and lies and deceptions, you know, made to conceal a person's substance abuse behavior, let's just say. So here's the transformation. I have many expressions and many healthy expressions of my need and care for others. I have many healthy expressions of my need and care for others. Again, you hear the words. Do you feel the change in the vibration? And again, as I said, if you want to change any kind of negative thinking, journal these positive transformational thoughts for 21 days minimum, and eventually your subconscious will take them on and you will heal. And it will be able to do the work for you, because in those 21 days, you've not only changed your thoughts, but you have changed the vibration of your thoughts on that subconscious level. Okay? So do that. And let me know how it goes for you. Okay? It's not just science. It works, because when we're discovering who we are as a soul, we work on a vibrational level. And there's a lot of vibration that we deal with in our lives. Our thoughts are vibration, our words, our sound is vibration, and even in silence, there is vibration. And we can heal from our past. We can heal from negative thoughts. We can heal from words that have come from a place deep inside of us that have never had a chance to heal. And they come from us in a wounded place in us. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me this evening. I am so grateful for each and every person that tunes in. And until next time, in 2 weeks, we'll have another Reclaiming Authenticity broadcast. And so shoot me an email or let me know what you thought about this particular episode, this broadcast, and send me some suggestions of what you would like to hear. And, I'll do something with it. So in the meantime, everybody be safe. Everybody have just a great Labor Day weekend coming up here. And still, Labor Day weekend is considered one of the deadliest weekends out there for travel. So everybody please be safe, and everybody behave yourselves, okay? All right. Everybody take care. God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.